Welcome to Cinema Smackdown on CJLO 1690 AM. My name is Michael Brody, and I am joined today by a man who's been so sick for the last 2 weeks, he is essentially a member of the Living Dead, Shane Simmons.
Well, I'm apparently suffering from an unknown virus of unknown origin. I hear there's something going around. I don't know. Could be anything.
I haven't heard anything.
No.
Why don't you open up the internet and see what it says?
Yeah, I'll have to check because we are talking probably yet again about zombie apocalypse. So it might actually be that virus that kills us all.
That's right. Shane, so it was your idea this week to be sick.
Yeah, exactly. To be sick. Because I was sick, I decided to catch up on something that I had not been caught up on in several years at this point. So in preparation for the final season, not that that counts for much because there's so many spin-off properties at this point, it doesn't feel like the end of anything, but the final season of The Walking Dead, season 11.
In order to do that, you had to watch season 9 and all of season 10, didn't you?
Yeah, I watched 22 hours straight.
Now, is that 22 literal hours or 22 episodes?
Well, it's 22 episodes. Plus, I actually went back and rewatched the last episode of the previous season, which I had seen before, but I wanted to kind of remind myself what was going on.
I mean, sounds...
It's easy to lose track of the soap opera.
Sounds like a noble pursuit, if ever there was one.
Yeah, well, I was almost instantly reminded why I had stopped watching. You know, it was a good 10-year run, but... it's a frustrating show. The highs are very high, but the lows are damn low. And it can experience both even in a single episode.
Well, let's get into it, Shane. Tell me a little bit about... I don't remember anything in specifically about any seasons. So the end of season 9, that's where you started?
Yeah, yeah. That was
the end of that?
That was they had made their truce with the Whisperers, who were the big threat at the time, and had just the previous episode had slaughtered a whole bunch of their people, including a number of main characters, who were like, oh, that's actually surprising that person's dead now. And then they did one episode where, okay, well, we've made this truce, but we actually have to break it because we're having a bad winter storm and we need to cross into their territory or we're all going to freeze to death on our way from point A to point B. So that's where that ended. And then the next season picks up with, okay, do they know we did that or not? Are they pissed off at us or not? And are we going to be able to resolve dealing with this villainous threat or not?
The interesting thing you brought up, that season 9 ending of the heads on the spikes, as they had done, the heads on pikes, whatever
right.
It was.
Yeah.
And I remember that episode because it had been an issue of the comic book. Now we're gonna get into spoilers about the show, spoilers about the comic, spoilers about, I don't know, anything we feel like today. So forewarned. So I remember the comic book. They turned a corner and realized, oh, a bunch of our friends have been murdered and all of their heads have been put on spikes. And then they revealed one by one who these characters were who had died. I'm speaking about the comic now.
Right. Yes.
And the number one character, I remember thinking, well, that's nobody I care about. Nobody I care about. Nobody I care about. And then Ezekiel.
Right.
The fellow with the dreadlocks and the tiger.
Is it formerly. Tiger? Yeah. The ex-tiger. Cause tiger gets killed off.
But the point being, it was Ezekiel. That was the big death in that scene. And that character, he was a very interesting character. They had done a lot with him. He'd been in 100 issues of the comic or something along those lines. And he just dies off camera because you just see him already dead. And I thought that was pretty shocking. And they were building up to, on the show, it looked pretty likely it was going to be Ezekiel. And then, well, he's not there. And instead, they killed emergency backup Carl, who was this young boy character they had been building up for the whole season as the Carl replacement for some reason, giving him a whole storyline, all sorts of things happening with him. And then suddenly, there's his head.
Yeah, it was a character who had been around before because the show does a time jump in that season where they advance the story, the plot line, by 7 years. And so this was a character who had been a kid. And then, of course, they had to cast an adult to play him moving forward. So, yeah, it's a continuing character, even though it was a new actor playing him for the majority of the season.
So that was a bit of a surprise because Houston was somebody, it felt like they were starting to build up, who they then cut short.
Right. But
more surprising than that, as I recall, and barely even paused on, was they killed a young woman who had, I don't remember her name.
Yeah.
She had been on for about 4 or 5 seasons.
Oh, more than that.
And was a major character.
She'd been on since season 3.
Right.
That's where she first showed up.
Not only was she in this show, she had entire episodes to herself.
Yeah.
Quite good ones, I thought. But more importantly, in her long line of experience, was the fact that between 2 seasons, she physically changed so much that when the next season started, there was a moment of like, wait, who is that?
Right. Yeah. Well, she had a baby between seasons.
She had a baby between seasons.
Her character did not.
And so there's no mention of the fact that it just looks like an entirely different person. She had massive physical change.
Yeah. She hadn't taken the baby weight off yet. So,
and it was just interesting. I just pointed out as in the sense of like, wow, that just never even got touched on.
Yeah. They just, well, what are you going to do? Ultimately, it's like,
well, that's, I wondered, like, then she's around for about 1 more season and then they sort of horrifically cut off her head with no scene in which she perishes. And I just thought, is this some kind of revenge by the producers? How dare you?
How dare you not go on a crash diet and exercise yourself half to death in order to...
I mean, it worked for Carrie Fisher.
Serve the continuity. Yeah, well, exactly. Exactly. Hollywood has a good history of getting people in shape, i.e. working them nearly to the point of death.
I don't know.
Because you have to be fit for this role as an old lady.
Judy Garland was the most well-adjusted teenager in Hollywood. So I don't see the problem. All right, so I just wanted to touch on that. But what was the beginning of season 10 in that case? So this is the Whisperers are already so powerful that our heroes all abandon everything.
They're you win,
Whisperers.
It's weird. They're an interesting concept for a villain in a zombie apocalypse scenario, because the idea is that they walk among the dead, they corral them to their purpose, and they wear zombie skin suits, basically, so they can fit in. And they only talk to each other in whispers, so they don't alert the zombies all around them that they're actually living humans.
Absolutely. I said this back in the day, I had read the comics. So when the Whisperer story started, there were inklings of it beginning. I said, well, the Whisperers was the best story in all of the comics. And there was 160 issues at that point or something when they showed up. Mm. And I said, this was the most compelling, most interesting concept. And I said that before they had ever shot a single Whisperers episode, but was, you know, they were hinting at this thing was coming. And then the actual Whisperer stuff showed up and it was so overly dramatic. And I just thought right away, I thought, oh, I'm not sure you got the tone right. And then that story was 2 seasons. And I thought, I know it wasn't that short in the comics, but it wasn't this long.
Yeah, Walking Dead is weird in that sometimes basically each storyline is dictated by whatever threat they're facing. So there's usually some big bad, some community or other that they've run afoul of. And they tend to wrap up those story arcs at odd places. So sometimes it's at the mid-season break. Or in the case of the Whisperers, the whole denouement of that happens towards the end of season 10, but there's still 6 episodes to go of the 22. So then they proceed to give you 6 episodes of some of the worst filler I've ever seen on that show.
Well, in case you don't know this, because you just binge watched this entire thing, all those extra episodes were just shot because there was no season last year. They didn't do a Walking Dead season.
Right. Okay.
There was, you know, something that made people sick for the whole year. So they just did 6 episodes as an addition to the previous season, just in order to remind people they still existed.
Wow. Could they have skipped those?
I agree, except for I like the Negan episode.
Oh, yeah. That one is actually great.
Which I would also argue is my opinion of all of season 10.
However, there is also an episode where the entire episode is Carol makes soup while Daryl tries to fix his motorcycle.
And then there's also an episode where Daryl sits in the woods pining over a woman.
Yep.
And which is really bad.
Which is never explained.
Nope.
There's no resolution to that.
Yeah.
There's also an episode where Preacher Guy and Metal Arm Guy find some whiskey and play cards and then kill the T2.
Oh, yes, yes. That weird warehouse episode.
Yeah.
They find him and he's got wives or something. And he seems like a weirdo who's actually pretty great and then turns out to be the worst person who's ever been on The Walking Dead.
Well, no, it's more like he's a threat and they're like, hey, you know, remember when we used to save people? We should get back to that. Yeah, we should get back to that. And then they're faced with this guy who is quite menacing. But, you know, they did do things like break into his place, drink his booze, and eat his boar. So, you know, they're not exactly innocent.
I actually remember kind of liking that episode, but that it has too many terrible twists in it.
It's not super terrible, but I've never liked the Preacher character.
He's very hard to take.
He and his morality has switched so many times over the course of his run on a show.
He's practically a character on Fear the Walking Dead, which I know you haven't seen.
Yeah.
But those characters, every episode you go, wow, that was a lot more with this person than I ever wanted. And they changed allegiances again.
There's an even better reason why I'm not caught up on Fear the Walking Dead. You know, I fell behind on Walking Dead, but Fear the Walking Dead mid-season 2 is like, I can't take this anymore.
I honestly can't believe you watched that much. But I actually have seen all of it because Fear the Walking Dead is awful for 3 entire seasons. And then they reboot the show in season 4. I think it's season 4. And suddenly it's the best of all the zombie shows for about 10 episodes. And it's a great 10 episodes. And then without reverting, they bring back all the characters before the reboot. And it becomes the worst it's ever been.
Wow.
So it's the strangest ups and downs. But they do have a period in which I was absolutely in love with it. And that's because they introduce a character who is a modern day gunfighter. And they do a great job of telling his story and making me care about him. And it felt like the whole show was by a different showrunner and that the tone was different. Again, lasts about 10 episodes.
I keep playing with the idea of catching up just to get to this part that I hear is good.
You have no need to watch the episodes prior to it.
You know I'll do it. No need.
Read the IMDb 1-paragraph synopses if you must.
Well, I'm going to guess it's Annoying Family is annoying for another season and a half. Could do without.
Welcome back to Cinema Smackdown on CJLO 1690 AM. I'm Michael Brody. I'm joined by Shane Simmons. Shane, why don't you shamelessly shill something? There's a lot of S's in there.
My books, Necropolis and Epitaph, both have a zombie in them.
That's true.
As a character. So not a flesh-eating zombie because my zombies are rather more mannered. They're more of the subservient traditional zombies as opposed to the... Or as one character puts it, it was like, well, you know, yes, they'll eat human flesh, but you got to order them to.
Works for me. As you were sort of alluding to, our episode today is we're doing a deep dive into The Walking Dead. Now, I didn't request this topic. Shane, you were
sick. I kind of did.
You were sick for a week or two and decided to binge multiple seasons of the series to catch up with a show you have barely any interest in.
Well, I went from being a big fan to being less of a fan to being a fan again to not so much. You know, there's an ebb and flow to that show where when it's good, it's great. There's stuff that's happened on that show that I will remember fondly forever.
Yeah, when Carol snuck into a military base and murdered a bunch of people, that was the show's high point.
Yeah, generally when Carol murders a lot of people is always fun. Although in this past season, it's like, Wait, is this the same Carol? Because we're watching her do nothing but screw up the whole season.
She just keeps getting over it. She's like, I'm over that whole murder thing. It's like, that's when you're most effective.
Yeah, yeah. We like it when you're the Angel of Death. Be that more often.
I mean, it's always...
Cool, it's a good goal.
There's always a moral reason for whatever she's up to. But she's the most interesting character on the show.
For me, the absolute highlight of the show, though, was... And as the show went along, we followed the group as they go from location. I did use the joke that the show was basically, zombies are attacking, run, let's hide over here. And then they're there for a while. And then, zombies are eating us again, let's run and hide someplace else. And then it just kept happening and happening and happening until finally they ended up in a little gated community called Alexandria, where they have been since. It's been seasons and seasons and seasons of them in the same location. But when they first arrived, there was a moment when they realized, oh, this little community has been spared the brunt of the zombie apocalypse, because it turns out that a million billion zombies have been accumulating in this nearby quarry. So yeah, they've had the occasional zombie, but it hasn't been too bad. But there's just one thing blocking them in this, and it's eroding and it's going to crumble. And then a million billion zombies are going to come down the road right at this community, and the walls are not going to hold. And they get to a point where the compound has been completely overrun and everyone's hiding in their houses, and they have to get from point A to point B within the compound. It's Rick and his son, Carl, and his new girlfriend and her kids. And what happens in that scene is so amazing. I agreed, even with the ebb and flow, I would watch the show forever just in case anything that good happened again.
Well, remind you that scene is almost identical to the scene in the comic book.
Yes, I'm aware of that.
And it was an excellent sequence.
Yeah, because sometimes they do variations of what happens on the comics. Sometimes they kill different characters. That's one that was quite accurate. And the stuff that happens is just... The comics are very hardcore. The stuff that happens in the comics is brutal to the point where the TV show, as brutal as that sometimes is, seems like the Disney G-rated version of the comics. But this scene... what happens is so horrific and amazing. I just fell in love with the show all over again. And that is also the episode where Rick just has had enough and goes out to face a million billion zombies alone and rallies a community to face the million billion zombies. And that's when they realize, hey, zombies ain't shit.
Yeah, that's a good scene too.
It's great because it turns a new page where they realize, hey, we got this. You know, we've been running and hiding for so long. But when we really get hard and get organized, the zombies aren't the threat. The real threat is always the other humans, which, you know, it's a theme that's gone back to George Romero with the original Night of the Living Dead and every subsequent zombie film since. But the thing is, the show keeps reverting back to expecting us to be scared of the zombies, and you can't do that after that scene. And that was a scene that happened years ago on the show now, and every once in a while they're like, oh no, here comes some zombies. And it's like, okay, we've established that one of you with a pocket knife can take out 50 of these guys with no problem. So when I see half a dozen or a dozen or two dozen coming down a tunnel and there's eight of you and you all have weapons, I'm not frightened for any of you anymore. And if any of you get killed, it's your own damn fault at this point, because even I think I could take on that many.
It's because their contracts are up.
Exactly. You know, and they've crossed the Rubicon of zombies aren't a threat. And at this point, we're pretty much all out of bullets. So we're just stabbing them in the head with whatever's available. And, you know, the characters, and certainly a lot of the characters at this point, have very hard plot armor. Spoiler alert, we know damn well nothing's going to happen to Daryl or Carol because they've got their own offshoot show coming after this season.
So, wouldn't it be fun though if they both died in the season and they go, just kidding, that was a fake out.
Yeah. That would be kind of amazing. But
Robert Kirkman, the creator of the comic, and by the way, the thing, I was no room to interrupt you earlier, which I didn't want to do, but that gag that you mentioned, where at some point they realize we've got this zombie thing, that is the rest of the comic book series. The zombies are no longer any major threat.
Right.
They're just part of the universe these folks live in, as opposed to being a scary big wall that they can never get around. And so the show is the one that reverts much more to, oh no, zombies all the time.
Yeah. And as of the first two episodes that have been released of the final season 11, there's a lot of that, oh no, zombies. And it's like, are you kidding me at this point? Really? I mean, there's a scene where Daryl, who is, you know, the great kick-ass hillbilly character of the show that's been on since season one, is crawling down a tunnel, and there's a single zombie coming after him in this enclosed space. As like, it's Daryl. He's killed a million of these things and a million threatening people. Are we really? The show is playing it like we're supposed to be worried for him or frightened in the least. As like, come on, guys.
Yeah, there is a little bit of difficulty with the suspension of disbelief issue. I will say though, the fake out moment of this is worth mentioning, I think. So the Walking Dead comic book is finished, and it ended around issue 196, something like that. Prior to the 200th issue,
and it was a surprise ending too, because no one knew the ending. That's what
I was getting. That's what I was getting at. Now, how do you create a surprise ending in comics these days? How you do that is, you write and draw your final issue, and then when the order cutoffs for next month's comics come in, you submit a fake ad for the next several issues. So Kirkman and his partner Charlie Adlard mocked up some fake covers for the next few issues, so that when issue 196 came out and was, I believe, triple or quadruple its normal size with no extra price, it was the same price as a standard issue. It came as an utter shock to everybody. They were holding in their hands the final issue ever. Unfortunately, this was spoiled the night before on the news, because the story got out that somebody read an issue, read a copy, and of course had to blab to the news so that no one else could enjoy the surprise. But they got pretty close to that moment.
I'm sure a lot of people missed that news story though. So
right. Well, nobody who goes online missed it.
So. Right.
At any rate, it was still one day away from, oh, that's the last issue? Wow. Okay. I actually think he sticks the landing pretty good at the end of his version of the ending.
Mm-hmm.
And his version of the ending will have nothing to do with the show, because it entirely revolves around a character who's been dead on the show for years.
Yeah.
And therefore, the final issue of the comic, very different than anything they could do with the show. And
well, certainly fine. Getting into major spoilers, I've always thought the phrase when a TV show jumps the shark, referring back to that Happy Days episode where the show kind of took a notable downturn in quality, I think that should be replaced with killing the Carl.
Right. I don't remember thinking that last season was so good right up until they killed Carl.
It was one of those things where it's like, doing this is so fundamentally wrong for the story, because up to this point it has really been the tale of a father trying to keep his son alive for years and years and years. That's the crux of what this is about. And once it stops being that, I'm not so sure it makes sense anymore.
Oh, I pretty much agree. And it may well have been behind the scenes issues that made that happen, because it would appear that the actor who played Carl was someone everybody enjoyed and they were pretty happy with him and his performance. But the manager, who was Carl's dad, his real life dad, was such a pain in the ass that I believe they killed Carl off in order to not have to deal with that guy anymore. That
could be. They also made the excuse of, well, he has to go off to college and blah de blah de blah. But I'm not so sure. You never know for sure what the
Know for sure that the actor who played Carl and his manager father were horrified.
Oh yeah, no, they were
learned that they were cut out of the show. The the manager dad apparently said, those bastards told us we had X number of more seasons guaranteed and that the contract was on its way.
Well, they should at least be gratified when they found out that Frank Darabont got his $200 million settlement from them.
That is insane. I understand. Here's the thing. It's kind of like the Seinfeld argument. The Seinfeld crew in the last couple seasons of the show were all being paid $1 million an episode, to which a lot of people said, what are you talking about? Why would you pay people $1 million an episode to do a TV show? And they said, well, it's because the show is generating that much money. And who do you want the money to go to? Do you think NBC should just keep all of it? Or do you think the people who make Seinfeld should split it? They split it. And it meant that the creator and the four main actors each got $1 million a week. And it is the same argument for Frank Darabont. He generated this property. I mean, he pretty much just took a comic he'd read and adapted it pretty closely, but he did bring it to life. He deserved a piece of that because he was unceremoniously removed from that show.
Yeah.
They.
I'm all for it. And I've been a big Frank Darabont fan for many years. So
I'm a big Frank Darabont fan up until The Walking Dead, and he's done some stuff since then I have not enjoyed. I will remind the listener, you're tuned into CJLO 1690 AM. I'm Michael Brody. I'm joined by Shane Simmons, and we are talking about the last couple seasons of The Walking Dead because Shane binged them while violently ill and lurching towards an undead existence himself this week.
I'll be rising from the dead any minute now. I'm already feeling a little peckish for that human flesh.
Well, Frank Darabont did Walking Dead, and then he took 5 or more years off and then came back with a mob TV show starring... I'm totally forgetting his name, but the character who played Shane on The Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah. John Bernthal.
Bernthal. He came back with a mobster show starring Bernthal and a few other people, and it is trite. It is a bad 6 hours of television. There's a reason why it didn't get a second season. It's dull.
Yeah, I was like, oh, yeah, this will be interesting because Darabont and him, and then I forgot all about it, and then I didn't hear anything again until you just mentioned it.
It's quite poor. It's just so mediocre, and it feels like bad TV. It also feels fake. You're just watching something, yeah, it seems fake. Bunch of guys in fedoras, they don't really look comfortable in them. It looks fake. But Darabont has an up-and-down career. I mean, just to segue over to him for a minute, what's most interesting to me about Frank Darabont is his 1980s screenwriting career before he started directing, because he wrote Nightmare on Elm Street 3, and The Blob.
Yeah.
And those are two magnificent 80s horror films.
They are the highlight of the Nightmare on Elm Street series and one of the three super amazing, excellent horror movie remakes of the 1980s, the other ones being The Fly and The Thing.
See, I thought you were going to say one of the best Blob movies.
Well, yeah, I think hands down the best Blob movie because
the original three.
The original and its sequel aren't any great shakes.
No, they're not great, but it is funny to see Steve McQueen fighting the Blob. So
yeah, and trying to pretend he's a teenager.
Exactly. At any rate, Darabont started off doing these great films that he wrote, and he just wrote those. He did not direct any of them, and it was only he has some odd little productions that he worked on, because Shawshank is not his first movie, is it? I'm not looking up his credits. I don't care that much.
No, but he also was the primary, if not only, screenwriter on my favorite episodes of the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles.
Oh, yes. That's right. I know you're the one.
I am the one, but I will maintain that, and I can never quite remember the title of the episode, so I always call it Young Indiana Jones and the Big Scary Train.
Right.
It's actually like the Phantom Train of Doom or some stupid title like that, but I think that's better than the last two Indiana Jones films.
I don't know. I don't know how you could ever try to hold something up against the most recent Indiana Jones movie. That was a perfect film in every conceivable way.
But controversially, I think it's genuinely better than The Last Crusade.
Yeah, but you and I both saw The Last Crusade and said, there's tons of great stuff in this, and I don't like it.
Yeah.
And I don't like it. It's also a very, despite some bloodthirsty moments, it's a very Disney-fied Indiana Jones film.
Yeah, well, the problem was it's written by Jeffrey Boehm and not Frank Darabont, so
yeah,
I'm not a Jeffrey Boehm fan.
Well, that's okay. He's long dead.
He truly is, yes.
He's been gone for 20 plus years.
Although I will say, I will give him credit. He did an excellent adaptation of The Dead Zone.
And he also is the person who changed Inner Space from a dead serious spy movie into the film that exists now. He adapted that from a very humorless science fiction script into the Martin Short, Dennis Quaid comedy that most people really love. I love it.
Yeah, no, Inner Space is a wonderful film.
Yeah, so Jeffrey Boehm has a strange career. He has a couple of good things at the beginning, and then
I will never forgive him for the work on Last Crusade, though, because not only are the characters inconsistent from film to film, the characters that are new to that film are inconsistent.
The only thing I liked about that, and I didn't enjoy the movie Last Crusade, even though people love it, I liked the whole movie joke at the end, the last line that tells you, "We named the dog Indiana." I like that a lot, because I don't know, it was warm to me. It wasn't some throwaway joke. It was, I don't know, made me happy, as opposed to although it really rewrote the character from that point on, because then he is constantly referred to as Henry Jones. This is very strange.
True.
I think throughout Young Indiana Jones, they call him Henry, don't they? Everyone calls him Henry.
Well, except during his war period, he has an alias, Henri de France, because he's pretending to be Belgian. Claims to be Belgian so he can join the Belgian army during World War One.
I can't believe you are the world's foremost authority on the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. And you are. I mean, you didn't work on the show itself, but barring being the executive producer, I'm sure you know more and care more about
it. The funny thing is, I haven't even seen all the episodes of it, but there are episodes I'm very much a fan of.
I mean, who hasn't seen all the shows in which Indiana Jones is 7?
Yeah, those are hard to take.
I just wish there had been full episodes of him being 90. That would have been awesome.
Yeah, and apparently all that's been retconned out of existence.
Because,
When they released the film, the whole various seasons on DVD, they cut out all the old decrepit Indiana Jones, the one-eyed Indy, which is sad, because I always wanted to see the story about how Indy loses his eye, but I don't think we're ever going to get that now.
Well, I mean, if Harrison Ford loses an eye on the new movie, it could happen.
Well, he's a little accident prone. He is that Harrison. Between crashing planes and getting his leg trapped in the Millennium Falcon and happened to him on the set this time.
Yeah, according to current information, as of this recording, Harrison Ford has suffered another somewhat debilitating injury on the set of a new Indiana Jones movie no one asked for. And apparently it means that a lot of the movie is going to be deep fake capturing him and putting it on somebody else, because they don't have a lot of choices left.
My understanding is basically there's someone else playing his part with a green hood over their head for a lot of the film, and they're just going to be stitching on Harrison Ford's already probably de-aged face.
That is the mark of quality, and boy, that's going to be a fun set to work on.
It's I guarantee you it will be your favorite James Mangold film.
That's another...
At last you can pick one. That's the one. That's the masterpiece I've been waiting for.
Well, you and I are pretty vocal in our... I don't know. We're the only people on Earth who don't like the movie Logan. I don't even know if you don't like it. I despise it.
I don't despise it, but I don't think it's very good.
I despised it. It really, really upset me on a number of levels. And when people who only are vaguely interested in movies chat with me and they, what movie do you really hate? I really hate Logan. They're always like, but it's so good. How could you hate that film? So, you know, I will say the crazy thing though, and this is so far away from Walking Dead material, is James Mangold has made something like 13 movies in a row I have hated. Everyone, they're bad. They're poorly made. They have weird pacing. They all feel like they are not the director's cut of a film. Just feel like, somebody got in there and trimmed a few scenes out and now there's a wonkiness to them. But if you go back to the early 90s, James Mangold wrote and directed a movie called Copland. And Copland is great.
It is.
It didn't make any money. And pretty much everybody involved in it is embarrassed by it now for some reason. I guess
I don't know, but I mean, if you want to see the greatest buddy cop film you're ever likely to get out of Sylvester Stallone and Janine Garofalo, that's the one for you.
I would watch another one of those now. I'm still a fan. This time she can play the giant CGI shark.
I'd go for that. Yeah, Copland is, despite Sylvester Stallone's presence, is a very grounded in reality, or at least the reality of a film that isn't ridiculous.
It's by far the movie I like him the best in.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I wasn't really paying too much attention in 1976 when Rocky came out, so I wasn't one of the people who saw that without knowing who that was and falling in love with it. I don't have that ability to watch it now and think that. To me, it's just
I remember my experience as a child seeing mm-hmm. that for the first time.
Yeah, so I don't have that experience, but I did watch Copland and think, wow, you can be great and sympathetic in something. But the movie didn't make any money, so Stallone's opinion was, that's the worst choice I ever made, so I'll never make that mistake again. Immediately ran out and started making movies like Cliffhanger.
And, I kind of like Cliffhanger, though. That's
I thought that was like when you just take the most generic formula for an action film and just insert new character names into it. That's what I felt about Cliffhanger.
Admittedly, the trailer for Cliffhanger was one of the best cut trailers I've ever seen, and the film itself does not live up to its trailer.
There you go. It fell squarely in the middle of John Lithgow is funny and he is not good in this movie, as opposed to, because he was starting to play comedic roles as well as scary villain roles, and this is one of his scary villain roles, and it did nothing.
Well, without Cliffhanger, he never would have been the best villain on Dexter.
He was good on Dexter. That was the last time I saw him play a scary villain and didn't think, bad idea, John Lithgow. But he is a genius on Third Rock from the Sun. Yes, now in my brain it's 30 Rock from the Sun because
right, because 30 Rock, yeah.
But Third Rock from the Sun, even if you despise everything else on that show and what you watch an episode, you go, oh god, it's so broad, it's so goofy. John Lithgow is giving a Shakespearean expert level performance playing an alien who does not know what's going on and is faking it, and he's so good on Third Rock. There's a genius just about him on that show. I think it's one of the all-time great performances, and he is a lot of fun on that. But we were talking about zombies. Zombies,
oh right, those things.
We're like 19 minutes into a segue into something else, but
I'm sure we'll get back to it.
So you watched 24 hours of The Walking Dead in the last couple of days?
Well, said 22, about that.
But there's also two more.
Yeah, but I mean, the episodes vary in length, and a lot of them kind of average out at 45 minutes.
Right. Some of them are well over 50. It depends. I just mean 22 episodes or 24 episodes. You really put the time in. Meanwhile, I did. There are about a dozen movies I've been begging you to watch for going on 20 years.
That is true.
None of which are over 2 hours.
And I love to torment you by not watching.
Any of which you could have banged out a dozen of in this time. I speak of one of the greatest films I have ever seen.
I know which one you're going to say, so shut up. I was going to say, one of these days I'm just going to call you up and I'm going to say, I just watched Fish Story.
Yeah, I know. I know you are. And you know what's going to happen? You'll either just hate it because I've been bothering you for 10 years, or you'll say, yeah, I'm showing this to everyone I know. One of the two. I doubt you'll see it and go, eh. But there are so many that are just in that vein of, what a wonderful film. See this immediately so we can talk about it for 2 hours, and then 10 years go by. Meanwhile, I mean, you couldn't watch Wonder Woman 1984 fast enough.
Oh, no. I had to know.
You knew.
How awful is this?
You knew.
I got my answers.
Yeah, much like Walking Dead. You knew.
I kind of knew. Yeah.
The interesting thing about Walking Dead, of course, is that they've teed up and then not delivered on a series of Rick Grimes movies.
Right.
They basically set it up. and included a tiny epilogue to the Rick Grimes story on the Walking Dead TV show that he is washed away and shows up on a shore somewhere else. And in the scene where he stands up, he's greeted by multiple well-known character actors, none of whom are on The Walking Dead show, all of whom I guess were supposed to be in the Rick Grimes movie, and then they never made it. And they're still saying they will one day. I have a feeling none of those actors will be in it because it will be years later at that point.
I look forward to not caring.
Back to Cinema Smackdown on CJLO 1690 AM. I'm Michael Brody. I'm joined by Shane Simmons. And today we are counting down the hits of many seasons of The Walking Dead because Shane became a member of The Walking Dead this week and decided that he was so sick, it was time to binge watch multiple seasons or parts of multiple seasons. At any rate.
And surprisingly, it did turn me into a zombie brain.
I don't doubt it. So going forward, we have talked about chunks of season 9 and 10. We have talked a little bit about the proposed Rick Grimes series of movies, which they have still never said whether they're going to be theatrical or televised. I think the plan was theatrical, but
Exactly. It's like, well, yeah, and it'll be streaming 5 minutes later.
It's a strange one. Any other thoughts on the season 10 Whisperers? Actually, we didn't really get through what they got up to. There were some okay ideas in that season.
Well, as I was saying, Samantha Morton is the big villain. She's the head of the Whisperers. And the former big bad villain of the series, Negan, is dispatched to deal with her. And we get that hot Negan alpha sex scene, which was so titillating. it was one of those, it's like, yeah, I'm actually kind of okay with just how creepy and awful this is right now.
No, I'd play that fine. I mean, it was elongated. I would say that sequence, not the sex scene, but the entirety of them hanging out together was too many episodes.
It was. However, I will say at this point in the show, Negan is the only character I care about.
Yep.
Even the characters, there's a couple who've been around since season one, only a couple at this point. But I've never been 100% on board with Daryl. He's okay, but I don't care. He's a filthy hick. What do you want? And Carol is good when she's being the angel of death, but she hasn't gotten to do that for quite a while. And she spent the whole season being annoying. So Negan, who was a great and interesting villain, has been on this redemption arc, which I like to see certain villains go through this. And I'm still really interested in what happens to him. So that's going to keep me watching till the bitter end.
Agreed. I mean, I don't love what they've done with him, but I'm still interested.
Yeah, there's certainly been some dull spots. I didn't like the war they ultimately had with him because it was written and directed by people who didn't understand strategy or tactics. So as the warfare goes, it was really dull. But I'm still, Jeffrey Dean Morgan just sells me on Negan. And he's a mix of, love to hate and hate to love.
The fascinating thing about the Kirkman comic books versus the television show is the Kirkman comics are, whether R-rated, X-rated, filthy in terms of language. So they say the F word constantly, and the Negan character is scripted. He's written to constantly drop the F-bomb, constantly, to the point where he'll say it 15 times in a paragraph of text, wherein it becomes almost Deadwood-like poetry. Mm-hmm. And then you get to the show, and all he's got is one word he can use, and it isn't much of a word. And it is so funny to see monologues he's done in the comics get translated into him just saying, "We should go kill those guys." You're like, oh, that was a lot dirtier in the original
This is something that has always baffled me about the show, is there's certain light level profanity they can use, but no F-bombs on a show that routinely shows human beings being torn apart.
Yeah, the regular eviscerations. if I'm not mistaken, and I might be, I think they have used one F-bomb per season lately. Much like Mad Men, who had one F-bomb.
I don't recall it, having just binged the previous season. I didn't. There were none. So right.
I thought they maybe I'm literally just thinking of Mad Men from the same network.
You might
had
be.
One a season, but I thought that The Walking Dead also had one or two.
I don't think they've ever done it. I don't think so.
Well, again, I'm not Googling it, but feel free to. Not you. Yeah.
It feels wrong though, because. If you could do, I mean, literally, there's been some violence at a level that even fans of the show weren't comfortable with. And yet, oh, yeah, no, we don't want the language to get too salty.
I mean, there are episodes where you see a rotting zombie come apart in a well of drinking water, which is absolutely filthily disgusting. And it's all on camera. Do you remember that one?
Yeah. But I mean, there more to the point, there was one character in particular who was clearly still just a teenager, like an underage teenager, being graphically ripped apart right in front of another character who was separated by a sheet of glass.
Yep, that's
one. And it was meant to be, it was meant to be super horrifying for this character. And it was super horrifying for the audience as well, to the point where I actually heard people complain about it. It's like, well, it's a zombie show. What do you expect? How do you have that on a show and not? I'd be worried about, ooh, I don't know if people can handle hearing that F letter word. Jeez.
The amazing thing about that particular short arc was that the actor who got ripped to pieces had just finished doing multiple seasons on a show where he played the young Chris Rock. And he was this cute, sweet, comedic, lovely character who winds up, his next gig is The Walking Dead. He gets about 4 episodes in, and they literally show you his face get pulled apart in front of other characters. And I just thought, wow, that's ballsy.
and you know, it was a good shocker moment too. That I actually point to that as one of the highlights of the show, because the setup for that was... a long-standing character got killed, sacrificing herself to have this guy be able to join the group ultimately. And I thought, okay, well, you know, I actually do like this character who's been around for a number of episodes now, and it'll be fun to see him as part of the group. And immediately, like the next episode, this horrible thing happens. It's like, wow, they weren't kidding around.
Yep. There's some wonderful stuff like that in certain kinds of storytelling. I found it to be an interesting companion show. There was a TV series that ended a few years ago that I really enjoyed for all, I want to say 8 seasons. And that show was called The Sons of Anarchy, which at first glance, you wouldn't say, I bet that's just like The Walking Dead show. Because it's a show about a biker gang who protect and sort of menace this small town at the same time. But they do both. And It takes a couple of episodes to get going in terms of like setting up characters and making you care at all. But as soon as that show finds its sea legs, I found the 8 seasons of that show were comparable to any of the best episodes of The Walking Dead, in that you had this core group of characters, any of whom could die at any moment. And they really milked that. They killed characters that I was dead certain would never die. When you watch a show and you go, well, your bread and butter is this guy. You will never kill him. And then they turned around and murdered a bunch of those people on Sons of Anarchy. And then you watched and said, I cannot take my eyes off the show because they might do it again. And then once in a while they would. And every death was an escalation to the point where To me, that was appointment viewing beyond belief. I was so won over by their willingness to hurt me.
Right. Well, you know, it's what I loved back in the day about Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And it is what I used to love about Walking Dead.
Yes.
But it's not that show anymore, because I just watched an entire season where they face one of the biggest threats they've ever faced, supposedly. And yet it only results in two extremely minor characters and one slightly vaguely major character who had become annoying.
Right.
That was the body count as far as like characters you're supposed to care about.
Mm-hmm.
It affected me not at all. And it's at the point where you know which characters have the plot armor and aren't going to die. And in the beginning of this new season, they did threat to kill a long-standing character. They did one of those fake outs that they do. And, you know, I've said, well, I've seen them do this stunt before, so I know that's a fake out. And ultimately, I was also thinking, yeah, but if they killed that character, I don't actually care anymore.
No, if the character, I mean, I guess
I care if it was Negan.
Yeah,
but, exactly. You know, other characters, whatever.
Had that character died in that scene, I would have felt nothing because the setup was so minor.
Mm, mm-hmm.
And also, that character has been annoying since their return.
Just, yes.
Like, just irritating and is threatening the one character I care about.
Yeah.
So, as he pretty much says,
it's like, oh, you're back. And you're failing to remind me why I like you.
Yeah. But as Negan himself says, I didn't put you in a bad position, but I'm not going to risk my ass to save you. You just said you're going to kill me first chance you get. Why? I think his line was, why would I put my balls on the line?
Right.
He was pretty funny in that moment. I actually didn't know how they were going to resolve that. And I kind of loved that the resolution was, yeah, I don't care about you.
Yeah. Well, I like the resolution that literally 5 minutes later, they do a similar, well, this guy's about to be killed horribly, but saving him wouldn't endanger us, so I guess we're not going to do anything.
Yep. Yeah, that I actually didn't think that was a great scene. That felt a lot like a Fear the Walking Dead scene, where it's like, I guess you're killing this person I don't care about in a gruesome way.
But there's a bunch of zombies bearing down on him. Have we not established that you can mow through them effortlessly at this point?
But why do that when you can just stab yourself in the heart 3 times? So much less work. That was, to be fair, just a cheesy stunt as opposed to something that made sense plot-wise.
I
did not care for it much. And that takes us up to our most recent episode. But yeah, the one high point I will mention for me is you got to remember that the season you just watched, all of 10, it was broken because the pandemic happened and they just had to, the show vanished and didn't complete its storyline for the longest time. They had 2 or 3 episodes left to finish of the Whisperer's story. However, as disinterested and bored as I was by that point, I actually thought that big scene of thousands of zombies walking off a cliff was kind of great. I don't know if you felt similarly.
Walt Disney would have been proud.
Wow. That's a deep cut. I get that joke. We don't have time left to explain it.
Look up Walt Disney and Lemmings if you want to know what I'm talking about.
That's more explanation than I wanted to give, but okay. Enjoy those nightmares, children, because that's what looking that up will give you.
Well, it's scarier than anything that's happened on The Walking Dead recently. There we go.